Welcome back to another episode of Making a Martini. I am your host, Caleb Figgles. Okay, so I have a pretty fucking cool episode for you guys. And it's a little bit different because I'm actually talking with a band. The band Olive Dares the Darkness, which is a truly phenomenal group based out of South Carolina. So definitely, I mean, I'm going to plug everything in the episode notes and we talk a little bit about it, but definitely check them out. We get a little insight as to who they are, how they came to be, and then they sort of take me on a little trip down their creative process. The drummer of the band is my very good friend, Danielle, whom I don't know if there's a person out there that I've blacked out more with, but I mean, so there's that. A match made in heaven. The themed cocktail of this episode is, and no, this was not a cop-out, it's a dirty vodka martini, but like, Olive is in the title of the band, so like, how could I not go that route? Also, in this episode, I do apologize for the audio quality during some parts. There were things that were going on with my mic that I couldn't tell while we were recording, but obviously it's in the playback, so, I mean, just, it's apparent, so just deal with it, okay? I'm doing the best I can. I don't make money off of this. I'm doing it for you, the listeners. So, okay. I think that's all I have to say. This is Olive Dares the Darkness. All right. So, hey, you guys. How are we all doing today?
Hey. Hi.
Hello. Hello. We are talking with Olive Dares the Darkness. And we are talking with Becca, Mike, Danielle, and Mr. Minister is what I have written down.
He laughs.
And that's what I would like to keep. So, yeah, I mean, I actually just went through this morning and went through your whole first album again. Just jamming out, having a great time, not paying attention to anyone at work. Not that I'm drinking during work or anything like that. It makes it easier. So I just kind of wanted to start and sort of talk to you all about how Olive Dares the Darkness sort of came to be, if you guys want to sort of just start there.
Sure. So we actually, I guess we should really be the poster children for Craigslist, believe it or not. So some people, you know, get used items off of Craigslist. Some people, you know, find their lost soulmate. In this case, Mike and I found each other through the wonderful world of the Craigslist neighborhood, if you will. So we had both, actually, Mike had been in Charleston for a minute, but I moved to Charleston in 2013. And, you know, I was doing the normal thing that most musicians do of like trying to get your name out there. Problem is, you know, I'm actually a pretty big introvert and I don't like to go out at night a whole lot. So that makes it hard as a musician. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I was like, let's try Craigslist. So I had tried, I had kissed many, many frogs on Craigslist.
Air sculptures.
Air sculptures. Air sculptures. Oh my God. They have to talk. Yeah. So before I met Mike, I had auditioned to be in this band called Air Sculptures, which
are they still a thing?
I don't know.
I think they still exist.
They still exist. Wow. Well, shout out to Air Sculptures. But anyway, I auditioned with them. The joke's on me because they turned me down, right? Yeah.
You got rejected?
I got rejected. What? Which was fine. It just wasn't a perfect match. You know what I mean? And they were all fine musicians. I think they just had a different trajectory they wanted to go on. Yeah. They also said like, oh, I don't know. Who knows? But it was meant to be.
Yeah.
And I eventually got off of Craigslist because I was like, oh, this is exhausting. And I'm meeting a lot of like super amateur musicians. And I had played pretty extensively in the Virgin Islands. I don't know if you know this, Caleb, but I'm actually kind of famous on a small island in the Caribbean called St. Thomas.
You heard it here.
That's right. So shout out to my St. Thomians.
Yeah.
So I had a pretty vibrant career down there. And then I moved up here and I was like, oh, this is some Bush League nonsense. So I got off of Craigslist and I was just marching to the beat of my own drum. doing my own thing. And then one day, randomly, I was like, I'm going to get back on Craigslist Musicians just to see what's out there. I didn't post or anything, but I saw Mike's post. And actually, if you listen to our album, the classical guitar part on the sixth track.
Is it the sixth one?
Or? Something like that. It's right. Yeah, it's because we have 12. It's right in the middle. Down by the Sea. Yeah. That's what he posted. And I think he posted something specifically like, I'm looking for a female singer. Here's what I can do. And I remember talking to my husband. I was like, oh, this guy can actually play.
Yeah.
Like there's melodic phrasing here. There's technique. There are things here that are musical.
Yeah.
So I hit him up. Go ahead.
Oh, and the Down by the Sea, that's the one where like the last 3 minutes is just like, by the way, kudos. It's the most calming, relaxing music I've ever listened to. I would be lying if I said I didn't listen to it like at the end of the night while I'm winding down. It's just great. I loved it.
With a martini.
Did you get all the way through the waves to the guitar solo?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Well, talk about why we did that. That's a good topic. But anyway, I hit up Mike. We met at a coffee shop. And we both have spouses. I was engaged at the time, and Mike was kind of a newlywed.
Like 6 months.
Probably. Yeah, like 6 months. And we met at a coffee shop and we really hit it off. And Mike, I didn't know this at the time, but I understand him now. He gets really overly excited about things. So at our meeting, he got overly excited and he's like, want to come to my house? Right. And then, you know, I should have gotten that like creepy stalker. Don't go, Becca. But I did. I was like, yeah, I'm going to go. You know, so I just texted my husband and I was like, I'm at blah, 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 Jones Street, you know, where he lived at the time. If I was like, I always texted him and I'm like, if I don't show up again, here's where I last was. So I went.
I've done that a few times. A couple of those texts throughout college.
That's hey, a this safety is where I'm going tonight. Yeah.
Yeah. A safety tip for everyone: always just text somebody your last known location.
It won't prevent you from being murdered, but they can find your body.
And the perp. So
good news.
I went to Mike's, and I think he just showed me a bunch of stuff. I don't even remember specifically what we did.
He just showed you a bunch of stuff.
So I do a bunch of stuff. But the key thing to remember here is that his wife was not at home. She was at work. So then I left. I went home. And apparently later that night, he was like, oh, so
three
I
brought- days later.
You didn't tell her for 3 days? Well, no wonder she was pissed.
Because it didn't phase him. Yeah. It didn't even phase him that it was like a bad thing that you came over.
Whatever. You just 3 days, Mike.
Yeah, it was like 3 days.
No, you were hiding it.
I just didn't think about it. I was like, oh, I did. I think I had told her that I had met a musician, but I didn't tell her the musician was female. I think she just assumed that you were some dude.
Oh, yeah, which is the norm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why when I said, oh, that's where I met Becca, she's like, who's Becca?
It probably went more like this, who's Becca?
Yeah.
Yeah. So needless to say, we got a Lindsay and I, she's one of my best friends now, which is great. I had to work a little bit to woo her. It wasn't that hard. But she totally hated me for like the first 6 months. Yeah.
For the record, my wife is an absolute alpha bitch. She is super standoffish. Remember when you first met her? She is standoffish towards you.
Yeah.
She can be like, she can just shoot laser beams out of her eyes. Yeah. Ice laser beams.
Yeah. And I don't mean to like degrade Mike too much here, but like, it's kind of laughable because she thinks everybody wants her man. And I'm just like, nobody.
Other than her, actually. Don't tell her. So, yeah. So, and then after we finally reconciled that nonsense, Beck and I started playing an acoustic duo, which was fine, but it was obvious that our hearts were not in it. So then we hooked up with these other two guys who remain nameless.
But we hate them.
It was a catastrophe. It was a catastrophe, but it taught us a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And then when that kind of fizzled out, the bass player left because he's a tool.
And he owes me $90 in taxes.
Oh my God.
I know. And I had cancer.
Track him down.
I know. I had just gotten diagnosed with cancer. Like, not even shitting.
He steals $90 for a cancer patient.
Like, obviously, like, you know, like, I have insurance and whatnot, but you freak out financially when you get diagnosed with, like, a serious disease. And so it was the yearly, like, hey, we just got $10.99 from all these venues. You owe me 90 whole dollars. And he would not pay it. He would not pay it. Oh, my God. And he skipped town.
To get away from $90.
For $90.
I will drive, move 12 hours away to avoid paying $90.
I hate you, Corey.
The definition of petty.
Corey's not
nameless.
His name. Nameless guy named Corey.
This is going to be like one of those don't fuck with cats things where the internet. So we find him.
After Corey, I don't know. I almost said something really bad. I forget that I'm a teacher right now. After Corey skipped town to avoid $90, we hired this guy who is definitely not my brother. Mr. Minister is not my brother.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
We've been playing together in bands since, 93?
I was born then.
Yeah. Like, many moons. Yeah.
Yeah, like, seriously, like... This guy who is not my brother and I would play literal gigs in high school. And I remember the band teacher asking if he was on drugs because he was falling asleep in band on his bass. And he'd be like, no, I just had a gig last night. He's like 15. My favorite gig story from when we did that is actually from this show. Like, we're, I don't know if you know this about most people. Most people generally hate PV equipment. And we were playing this gig, and all of a sudden, I just hear this guttural roar, and then his amplifier flies out into the audience, and he proceeds to walk out to the amplifier and stomp it to death mid-show. And when he was like 15 years old,
I kept playing them, so I also had a direct line to the PA.
So that's so rock star.
But anyways, this guy who is definitely not my brother moved here and replaced the guy who is not named Corey.
Right.
But we quickly realized that.
That the cancer in the band, no, was not my breast cancer.
Didn't live in your boob. It lived behind the drums.
It lived behind the drums. That guy was awful.
So we dissolved the band.
Yes. And so instead of, I like to point that out though, instead of just fire, come on, we can't go there. I'm going there. Instead of firing him, we just quit. We dissolved the band and then got back together the next day without him.
Because we just really liked the name. So we're like, you know what? Have the name. We all quit. And then we just got back together and be a different, when we're a different band.
Yes.
And at that point, we played with a drum machine, which was terrible.
Yeah, it was bad.
So we hired a human.
Still better than the previous drummer.
Yeah, it was still better. And then Danielle had been begging us for probably 3 years at this point.
Play.
Can I play with you guys? I can actually keep time.
Yeah. And Danielle.
I came to your shows and supported you, but
she had a lot to say.
I would have liked to step in a couple times.
And Danielle and I had been working together at the school where she used to work since year one. So we've been working really closely together as teachers for many years. So it was really a super organic transition.
Yeah.
And I think that was really important, both Mr. Minister and Danielle.
Y'all still auditioned me.
Didn't we really?
You made me come in and audition to make sure I could play with the track. And Ken had to get to know me and make sure he could play with me.
Oh, that's right.
For the record, Minister. Yeah, Mr. Minister.
Mr. Minister.
Yeah. Mr. Minister is the kind of bass player who, if he has a drummer he can lock in with, he's awesome. If he has a drummer he can't lock in with, it's like he's never played a bass before. So, and that was the problem with the old guy.
Yeah, so we just had to make sure Ken gave you the seal of approval.
Which he did.
Yeah.
So then I was allowed to make music with these rock stars.
And that was what, 3 years ago?
And it was right before we hired her just to go on tour.
That's right. Yeah. Because we set up a tour in the Virgin Islands.
I joined a band and got to go on tour like less
in the Caribbean. Yeah, of all places.
Yeah. Her first band experience was to go on the road. She had never played the band before, only pit bands.
Right.
But she'd never been exposed to the world of, being in a band. So we're like, hey, you have 3 rehearsals, then we're hitting a plane. And you're like, oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. That's a very, I love that story.
It's very long. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, it was perfect.
We skipped over a lot. We did.
Well, where does the name Olive Dares the Darkness come from? That's the,
so.
Yeah.
You know, so I originally wanted to name the band Olive in the Eternal Gloom. But everybody made fun of me because they said it was too emo.
It was too long and complicated.
How is Olive in the Eternal Gloom more long and complicated than Olive Dares the Darkness?
It doesn't flow as well.
So then I had this idea that every album it would be Olive in this new thing. But everybody's like, no, that's a terrible idea because no one will have any idea who we are because the name keeps changing, right? So Ken... You can explain that where the name
Mr. Minister.
Oh, Mr. It's out of the bag. You said like 12 times at this point.
This guy who's definitely not my brother, named right. Mr. Minister.
So far, every time Ken has said it's been immediately replaced with Mr. Minister. I think everybody can figure out the connection.
The issue is we never talked to you as Mr. Minister in plain speech. We didn't practice that.
We didn't. No.
I know.
So now, as far as the name goes, there's kind of a conceptual element to it as well, because there's always the argument, like, do you make your music for yourself or do you make it for your audience? And Olive Dares the Darkness, at least like how I see it, we produce something and we're daring the darkness to give us an audience to see what comes out of it. And that's kind of how I see it. It's very kind of a conceptual sort of thing.
Yeah. And to add on to that, I think a lot of us have played with different dichotomies in life. Lots of opposites, you know, we're kind of, you know, teachers by day, public servants by day, yes. You could say, and then, you know, living the raucous musician life, not really after, you know, at night. But I mean, I know I've personally always had a lot of elements of opposites in my life. In terms of being a musician and the type of music that I produce and the type of music that I make in conjunction with what I teach. So I think Olive was kind of this idea of like, Olive is the light, you know, Olive is the hope, and the darkness is just the opposite of that and what those two can play off of with each other and what that can produce.
And to go even further down that rabbit hole, there's supposed to be a comic book that goes with it that is still being written, yes, where, yes, Olive is the protagonist. Mm-hmm. She represents enlightenment, the darkness represents ignorance. Writing a comic book is really hard. So it's taking a long time, but that's the idea.
Yeah. We do work with local artists. We're super blessed to have a team of artists and publicists.
Who just made posters for us.
That's right. Who makes, nice. Everybody look at this poster. Wait, you can't see it.
But the man didn't see it. I thought it'd be kind of big out.
You can see it on Instagram, on the Facebook.
Right. Yes.
Nice. And so I think that's part of the reason that this band has kept, you know, chugging forward despite COVID, despite, you know, quite honestly, living in the wrong town. We got the cool sound for the wrong town. Right. It's because we've had this awesome group of people. Oh,
cool sound, wrong town.
Cool sound. Okay, write that down. Got it. Thanks, Caleb. So it's just been a different way of doing things, I guess.
Yeah. So the album cover for I, was that a local artist or is that something that you guys came up with?
Well, it's actually instead of I, it's titled One. Because as far as I know,
listen, that's not your fault.
It's okay.
It's technically a power fault.
I thought it was I for a while. Yeah, it first came out. And
it's supposed to be the Roman numeral one.
Roman numeral one
in that font.
But there's no, yeah. And then when you put it in, you know, all of your information into the database, like if you were to ask Alexa to look it up,
she says I,
yeah. You know, yeah. So like, oh, whoopsie.
That fucking bitch. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So maybe the next one will call it me or something. I don't know.
I would like it to be two, but I'm afraid that she'll say I.
Isn't that kind of following the idea of like how comic book series work?
Yeah. Kind of, and we're doing the Led Zeppelin thing because they're first.
Yeah.
Right. We're ripping that off.
Yeah. Well, because it goes back to the original idea that we wanted every album. I wanted the first. So it's the hero's journey. The first one, Olive is young. She's daring the darkness. The mm-hmm. second one, she's going to the dark side. It's the eternal gloom. And the third one, she will be triumphant. And that would be the name. But we never got that far conceptually. So we just switched over to being 1, 2, 3.
Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3. I will say that when I first knew that Danielle and I go back to college days. Way back. I was trying to think of it, and I actually don't know how I know you. I just know that I do.
Through Adam.
I know. Yeah, I just couldn't remember why. Yeah.
The term for knowing that you know a thing that you don't know where you learned is technically source monitoring.
I learned it from college and alcohol is where I met Caleb. Yeah. Caleb and I got so screwed up one night that we got engaged on stage in front of 1,000 people at a bar.
Oh, you're the guy.
Yeah.
The long-term fiance. Yeah,
that's right.
Called me up on stage. It was a whole thing.
Just to get free drinks, which in retrospect is brilliant.
It was
brilliant.
I wanted to be serial, engagers.
Yeah, but then the bars were closing. It was already late. So
I know.
I forgot your question because I got distracted by you not knowing the title of our album.
Not doing your homework.
To be fair, I did. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about No Heart, which is the second track on One. And you have a music video for that one, correct?
Yeah, my wife made that.
Yeah. No Heart. Yeah, once again, everything is kind of organically grown within this band and produced. And we have lots of visions of grandeur. We need music videos. All bands need music videos. So we're working on that. But No Heart, definitely one of our catchier songs. And she went and found some old copyright free material from an old film. Anybody remember what that film was called?
Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah. And spliced that up with just some different live footage. If only to get our little faces out there and online. So
that's really, because I was, that my question was, because there was the Night of the Living Dead footage, and you guys, some of your promo pictures are you in a movie theater, and you've got one where it's the four of you and the creature of the Black Lagoon is behind you. I didn't know if there was something behind the sort of classic horror movie imagery, or if is that something that, like you said, just organically kind of happened, because it was fucking cool, because I love Night of the Living Dead. I live down the street from Monroeville, bound to love it.
Yeah, that's where George Romero filmed everything.
Oh, cool.
It's a big deal, man. Yeah, I didn't know that. I think the whole image is because we have a comic book, it's kind of comic booky, and comic books and classic horror are kind of linked. So that's where that kind of came from. Okay.
We also have a great fear in this band of looking like a traditional band. The classic, we always use the analogy of, the band that stands on the railroad tracks with their instruments, their instruments not plugged in, will hand Danielle a pair of drumsticks. Yeah,
right.
And then they'll be like, all right, look tough, guys. Look real cool.
Who wants to get together today and look pissed off in front of a brick wall, guys?
Yeah, exactly. So we have a great fear of that. In fact, that's an interesting story right there. About a year and a half ago, we did our first main photo shoot. And that is, So all bands break up and get back together, but this band doesn't do that frequently, which is good. I think it's because we're all old adults and we're just like, no, this is something for fun. But we did almost break up over the photo shoot. Yeah, because Mike was like, I don't want any photos of my face. I don't want to be in any photos. Everything is going to look dumb. And I was like, yeah, but we need it. We need it.
To be clear, I just didn't want photographs
in the railroad tracks.
I didn't want photographs that didn't look planned.
Yeah.
Right. I wanted to describe to the photographer what we envisioned, and they had to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
And for the record, the only photographs from that photo shoot I do not like are the ones he just, let's try these.
Yes.
I can't stand
the ones, but I look fabulous in those. And this is all that truly matters. So I like that set of photos. So if you look at the photos online, we did put a lot of effort into the visual concept of things. And I think that's an important thing about the band too. Mike was pretty adamant at the beginning that if you go to see a lot of bands, they kind of show up, in an old t-shirt and some dirty jeans and put their instrument on and we're supposed to swoon, I don't get it. That was a quote from Clueless, by the way. But anyway, so I think part of the idea is not just playing the music, but also creating a live show experience. For our audience, you know, we're once again, we're daring our audience to kind of join in the gimmick with us, because let's face it, when we all go to shows, we're going to shows to kind of get out of reality and go into something fantastical for the evening. So we want to try to create that. So that's why, you know, when we play live, we all wear specific things. That's why when we do photo shoots, we plan for specific visual elements.
And I think it's hard to ask your audience to care about your music when you don't look like you care about your music.
That's a good way.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if you go up there and just look like you just pooped yourself, which by the way, Ken has an experience about a sound guy who pooped himself. We were at the Sparrow and the guy like was miking your bass amp and he looks at me and goes, I think this dude just shit himself.
I didn't remember that. No, actually, yeah, because he was trying to plug the direct line in my amp and it just smelled awful.
And like, how many times you've been to shows and you saw the guys on stage and like, man, those guys look like they just pooped themselves. They look like if you were to walk up them, they would smell bad. It just don't look like you don't care to be there.
This guy actually did smell bad.
Oh shit. Literally. What was sort of the process of you guys being a band during COVID? Like, I mean, what I remember talking to Danielle a little bit and you were like, that's actually where we kind of created a lot. What was that sort of shutdown experience like for you guys?
I think it was actually, in a lot of ways, I know it was an awful time for a lot of people. Actually, my parents both got COVID. It was a very dire situation for a while. So why it wasn't a great time for most people, for this band in our little microcosm of life, it was actually a good thing. Because I think like most bands, when you're playing live and you have a live rigorous live schedule, you spend a lot of your time preparing for that. So you don't get as much time to write and record. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of other bands, we did all the recording ourselves. Namely, Mike does it. Mike is the man behind the curtain, if you will, our wizard in The Wizard of Oz.
We're related to him.
Really?
No, yeah.
He's not a real...
No, a real the character. Author.
Oh, the okay.
He's like a great, great, great.
The wizard isn't actually real.
Listen, if you ever met our dad, he would tell you that we were related to the wizard. But no, Ken and I are actually like... Oh, sorry, Mr. Minister and I are definitely not related at all to each other. But if we were, we'd be great, great, great nephews of the author of The Wizard of Oz.
Okay, well, that's now we know where that comes from. But we do, you know, this whole album was recorded in a little room in his apartment at the time. And we're talking, you know, engineered, mixed. We mastered it somewhere else, but that was only after mastering it ourselves and then comparing it. And, you know, so lots of back and forth. So not only did it give us the time to do that, but it gave Mike the time to really refine his skills in the studio. And he's, I would say, a very accomplished, sound engineer. He's actually the music tech teacher at our school and runs a really awesome program there. So that gave us a lot of time to kind of dig our heels in. And then, you know, he made a lot of us learn how to use Reason as well. So, you know, although he did the bulk of things, you know, I learned how to record my vocal tracks. This guy had me in my living room with a blanket over my head in the middle of summer singing my heart out. He's like, it'll be better acoustically. Bono does it. And I'm like, okay, put the blanket over. You know, like,
what track was that on?
I think it was Drought.
And that's, yeah.
And I love the vocals on that one. Yeah.
So, that shit works.
Yeah. Yeah. So that gave us time to really experiment and create, I think, a deeper sense of our tracks, because a lot of times bands just try to play exactly what they have on the album. And what we have on the album is actually different than what we have live to a certain extent. There's a lot of layering going on the album. There's a lot of different levels of sound there, so that gave us time to play with everything and tune our ears into that.
We should clarify what she means when she says taught us how to use Reason, not rational thought. Reason is the
use reason.
Reason is the recording software that we use.
Yes. Okay. That's glad you clarified that.
Ken actually has written some really cool stuff in Reason that is awesome that we're going to use eventually. We're working on the next song.
Yeah. So sometimes people write within the program. Sometimes we edit. Sometimes we mix.
We use it live. It's the core of what we are.
Yeah. In so many ways. As an electronic band, it's a pretty important part of what we do.
We actually call it Krang.
It's the fifth member.
Krang is the brain that's in the robot in the Ninja Turtles.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about your guys' process, about, you know, the conception of a song through the sort of end. I know that when we first spoke, you asked me what, like, my, I don't even know if you asked me what my favorite song was, but I told you anyway, and it was Say Oh.
Love it.
So I don't know if you guys want to talk about that specifically, or even just in general, like how you know, you start with inception to like physical recording, yeah, and what that process looks like, if you guys want to talk about that.
Sure. That's another really important question and a really important pillar of this band. Early on, Mike and I specifically got together to make music as a collaborative nature. And that's the other reason that we've gotten visual artists in. We want it to be more like a community of artists creating things. And we can create stuff on our own. Like I was a lone singer-songwriter for years before I met Mike. But I'd be lying if I said that, you know, I didn't bore myself. You know what I mean?
I bore me.
It's just so much more interesting.
Do you bore you, Ken? I mean, Mr. Minister? Mr.
Thoroughly entertained by myself.
and Danielle's written like 12 whole musicals and 15 drum things.
So we love collaborating, which is cool because it kind of takes the ego out of things as well.
Yeah.
It's not like, this is my song or this is my riff or I don't like what you're doing with my riff. I really just have like zero ego in this band, and it's been really liberating in that sense. I still think Mike has ego, but that's a whole different podcast.
We'll see you next month for Mike's ego.
It's because he has a headache. We're just kicking him today. You know, like, but you know, Say Oh, for example, we just collaborate all over the place. So for that particular song, he had a sequence written. So like a little electronic thing.
That thing in the band goes, that's all I had.
Yeah, that's all we had. I can't do it as well as he can. But yeah. So he gives me like the bare bones musically. And maybe like some MIDI drum tracks with it or something. I don't know.
Yeah. So I wrote it because that thing sounded cool. And I just envisioned Becca listening and going, oh, and being bored by it. And I was like, but wait, that's a really cool idea. Maybe what if she was bored by it? And then, you know, so I gave her the little loop of the drums, and I said, here's what conceptually I want it to be, you know, oh, but then I explained to her that this is actually, can I tell now?
Okay. Yeah.
Is actually an ode. Ode? Mm-hmm. That'd be the right word. To Shania Twain's That Don't Impress Me Much. It's just an updated version of it. Because she's just this, I don't know, snarky lady who no one can impress. And that was the concept. And then Becca turned it more into being about not being a slave to possessions.
Yes. Yeah. So like almost like an ultra feminist vibe in a weird way, just because a lot of times females are associated with materialism and like material girl. Right. And this song is a little bit of the antithesis of like that. Like she's fabulous and she knows she's fabulous and she don't need your things. You know, you can't make it too hard to say no. So like everything I list in there, you know, house in the Hamptons, movie stars, like all of it is just it's just not that great. And so he gave me, the concept, which I love. I love writing to a concept. Yeah. Sometimes it helps because when you sit down to write, you're like, I could write anything right now. I could write about anything, and it's a little overwhelming.
Yeah.
I also don't like to write, unlike many artists. Insert Taylor Swift here. I do not like to write autobiographically very much. That's because my life is very boring these days. I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah.
So I love to write stories, and I love the old idea of, you know, gestures and whatnot, going around and telling stories, and that being the main idea behind being a musician. So I definitely want to tell a story. So it's fun for me to kind of get in the headspace of a different character. And this was a fun character to get behind, because in reality, I'm like, Vacation in the Hamptons. Yeah. Or Salt and Caviar. Yeah. You know, but it was kind of cool to be like, no, I don't need that. So I took it, and then yeah, and I think he wrote the chorus. No, he was just like, I just want you to stay in the chorus. Oh. I think that's all. Yeah.
Oh.
And then I took it and I kind of ran with it. And then from there.
It sucked. It wasn't good. It was not coming together. And we kept telling Ken to write a bass line for
that's
it.
That's right.
And then he's like, I can't write a bass line for this.
Who wrote a bass line for it?
Well.
Yeah, not at first.
Yeah, for a while you're like, I can't write a bass line.
But that's always my process, though. I just have to noodle and just make noise until something clicks.
Yeah.
And then your bass line is, to me, is the song.
Is my favorite bass line. I think that Ken does. I think his that bass line sticks out to me more than anything. And then I think Danielle is.
And I just kind of it depends what order I come in, I guess, with what's already done and who has. Each song is kind of almost led by somebody different each time. And like who has the first kind of idea, whether it comes lyrics or a guitar melody or something. Mm-hmm. But I actually I don't record. I play on an electronic kit and Alesis during shows, which is, I guess you guys like having the electronic kit because there's no stage noise. But what are you showing her? What is that?
This describes our process.
Oh, okay. We'll get to that in a minute. But actually to record, I use Finale to write out what I typically play. And again, the album is a little different than what I actually play live. But I notate that in Finale, send Mike a MIDI file, and then we work together to make sure the tone is right and accents to make the music stand out a little bit more.
Yeah. And then the computer does it.
And then a computer does it for me.
For a number of reasons, but we're an electronic band, so we can get away with that. And a lot of great bands use electronic drums. I just listened to a bunch of Radiohead and I was like, those are MIDI drums right there.
The first two albums, or maybe at least the first album of the Scissor Sisters, is electronic drums. Mm-hmm. My band, my favorite band, which will remain unnamed, always use drum machines.
That's also for a reason of practicality. It's hard to record drums, it's expensive, and you need a really nice kit, and you need a nice sound treated room, or else it just sounds like junk and it kind of drags down the whole track. And when we do it electronically, we have so much more control over the parameters and we can really make it exactly what we're looking for. So it's super cool to have somebody like Danielle on the drums who understands music notation and rhythm, and she's very musical. And also some drummers that we've worked with who shall remain nameless got a little butthurt about like, no, that's an electronic thing. That's not me. And I'm like, yeah, but if you can write the part, it's still you. But I think she kind of likes that.
I love it. I can get my recording done in like 20 minutes if I already have the idea laid out. Pop it into a Finale and go.
Yeah. And then we fool everybody into thinking that like we recorded this in some multi-million dollar studio, you
know? Which now everybody knows.
I hate to break it to everybody. Most of the stuff you listen to is electronic everything.
Yeah.
There's like a new song by, I think that's Rihanna, and the guitar solo is clearly fake. Oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I have my hand in my mouth for some reason. Is that what you were gesturing?
Yeah, I was like, no. Yeah.
But her guitar solo in that song is clearly fake. But I think it credits Carlos Santana. And I'm like, are you kidding me? This is not even a real guitar. Like, I don't understand. And that's that right there, that kind of stuff is what No Heart was about, is how modern pop musicians are zombies. So...
Wow, fuck. All right.
Yeah.
Ooh, got chills. I loved it. Oh, shit. How do you, is it sort of a universal decision? Like, is there ever an opportunity Ooh, it's that 1 o'clock martini. Is there ever like something that comes up where like, you know, one person is adverse to doing it, but the other three, like, how do you decide what goes, what stays, or is it all pretty much mutual? Like, yeah, that's great. Let's do that.
That's weird because we kind of all have perplexed looks on our faces right now. Like,
I have an example of this.
Okay.
We were ready to walk away from Minimal.
Yeah.
And Ken's like, no, this song is rad. Let me fix it. And he went and fixed it. And now we love that song. So a lot of times when we come across a song, and we have a song right now that's doing it to us. Mr. Sorry Part 2. We're like, well, I don't know if I see your vision all the way, but it's starting to come together.
Yeah.
So what will happen is if a song is not really selling it for everybody in the band, one or two people who are into it will take it upon themselves to make it work. And then usually by that point, the rest of the band's like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah. And sometimes you just have to trust in somebody's vision and that's okay. And that comes back to like the no ego thing,
yeah.
You know, like Mike is, I would say in all respects, the leader of the band. And I think we all acknowledge that and we're okay with that. And none of the rest of us want to lead the band.
I couldn't do what Mike does.
Yeah, exactly. So. He has a certain set of skills.
I play drums.
Yeah. I lead people all day at work. So I don't want to lead people recreationally in what I do in my spare time. I'd love to just follow. So a lot of times you'll hear Danielle and I saying, Okay, Mike, we're going to follow your vision. Okay. And most of the time, it turns out great. Every once in a while.
There are two songs that we have, three songs we've walked away from.
Yeah, there's a handful of songs where we'll try. And eventually we're just like, you know what? We tried to pull and stretch this song every which way, and it's just not working. Let it go. And that's okay. Yeah.
I don't know if those songs are completely dead either. I think that
it's one of those I haven't heard yet. I'm still waiting to hear.
I think conceptually for me, you don't write songs. You kind of grow them.
Yeah.
Like you provide an environment for creative ideas to kind of take shape, and the song does what it's going to do. So even songs that to me we haven't used aren't dead, because maybe in a year from now, it will be a position that we can use it, you know? So I don't see anything of ours ever being written off.
Yeah, it's just gets shelved. And some of our songs are written overnight, and some of them take years. There's one track on the album called Bellicose, which I started writing when I wrote the piano line for that when I lived in the Virgin Islands. And then I brought it to Mike here, and he stewed on it for years. I think all in all, that song was 8 years.
I think
that
was one that Lindsay called a skateboard song, because I had that weird skateboard.
That's right. And we had other parts to it.
Looking back, that was terrible.
Yeah, sometimes we overthink things, you know, which is normal, but you just have to keep, you know, fleshing out ideas.
Sleeping Giant was a song that Mr. Minister and I used.
Nice.
In our old bands. And on the new album, there's a track that will be on there called Blackstone, which is also a riff that he and I came up with probably 20 years ago.
Yeah. That's the first song I fell in love with when I heard you guys play.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Blackstone was what made me want to jump in there.
Cool.
When it comes time for you guys to record something, do you do it all together? Does each person do their own? I mean, obviously we kind of talked about Danielle's a little bit, but.
Mm-hmm. We track individually. During COVID, a lot of us used to go over to Mike's place and track, but during COVID, we were a good little band, and we really did stay away from each other for a number of reasons. You know, everybody had to do their part at the time. Yeah. So that's why he had me at home singing under a blanket and all kinds of crazy things. And then I'll go to his place and lay down a bunch of vocal tracks, and then I'll take the computer home and I'll edit them and comp and pitch correct and come back and do that.
And during that time, Mr. Minister bought a recording setup with headphones. I think it's just so he can just tune the world out. I'm gonna go record and you just sit in silence.
Yeah.
Nice bourbon when I don't talk to anybody, it's kind of nice.
What's coming up next for you guys? I know that there is a podcast, Olive Dares the Podcast.
Yes.
Have you released that yet? I probably should have looked that up, but
the first three episodes are up.
We're in the middle of promoting our album online, both locally and online, and that's been a whole brand new world that we're sinking our teeth into. And everybody's kind of getting into a different aspect of that, mm-hmm. because being a musician in today's world is difficult, to say the least. But to get your music out there, you have to know what avenues you need to take online and, you know, where to put your funds and whatnot, and how to get things on playlists, how to get things in front of people who are willing to listen. And we have listeners all over the world.
Actually,
we do. Yeah.
Which, by the way, this is, I was going to wait till after the podcast to tell you this, but we were contacted by a record label in England.
Ooh, finally. Yeah. We're becoming big in the UK. Right. And our goal
in Argentina.
In Argentina. And our goal is to become big in Germany. Okay. We think we have like a gay 80s Euro dance vibe, and we really want to get right?
That's where I thrive.
Charleston, believe it or not, isn't crazy about us, or at least they just don't know that they are. I don't know. We're still figuring out. This town loves Americana.
And cover bands.
Yeah. So we kind of have, I think our ultimate goal is to like tour in Europe. That would be amazing. You know, I think that's kind of what we're shooting towards.
Or we were talking about maybe looking at going to the UK next summer in July. Mm-hmm. That's like, we're opening the avenues to that really soon. And if this, you literally just wrote me a little bit ago, and like, can we come play for you, please?
Oh my gosh!
But yeah, coming up even sooner than that is our show this Saturday. Forgot. We've been promoting all through COVID. I'm ready to play now. All of the other people sitting at the table around me, I have a lot more experience playing live than I do. I mean, I've played live, but as Caleb has also experienced, it's all been musical theater when it comes to drum set. That's where it's at. So I'm excited. I would play a show all weekend, every single night. I think everybody else is a little burnout with that. I'm excited.
If they were good shows, I'd play every night.
All right.
But like, there's been a couple times she's like, hey, this hobo wants to play down at the Burn Barrel. And we're like...
I would love it.
Please, can we go?
we've gotten choosy about what we book these days. Because it is a labor of love.
And we have a lot of equipment and a lot of stuff that plugs in. So some venues just don't work out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We play at a venue. We have a large amount of stage equipment. And we spent like $50 on posters, gave it to them 2 weeks before. We get there. They have lost our posters, and they're like, you can play directly in the sun with this one extension cord.
Yeah.
And they're just like, no. Middle finger in the air, drove away.
I left. And I knew the band was like, what the hell, Becca?
Wouldn't it work?
We should also preface this by saying it was in the beginning of August in Charleston, South Carolina.
In the direct sun.
Like, and not only I had a migraine that day. That was why I was really And so I just took one look at it and I was like, I'm not doing this. I was like, I don't have to do this.
Well, they threw our posters away. Clearly, they didn't care about us.
Yeah, like they didn't even know. Like we went there, like, informed them that we were playing. You know, it didn't make sense. You know,
fuck that.
The most enjoyable part about all of that for me is after everybody else left, I stayed there and had a couple drinks, and it was really awkward because they obviously were upset with me.
Because like, shut up. You remember you put your arm out the window and gave the middle finger and drove away.
Yeah. Yep. To you guys, or
I think just to the air.
I think I was like, I wouldn't do that to you guys.
Everybody.
She was out.
Although I do want to say that I wasn't expecting to say the hobo down by the Burn Barrel, but I love that image now. So
that's also a song title.
Writing it down.
Excited to listen.
We do have that gig coming up, and then another one at the end of July that we just got last week as well. So
yeah, and then we have one in September, which is important because it saves puppies.
That's right. We're doing a Rock the Rescue, I think it's called, a benefit.
September 7th.
Yeah, and then right before COVID, we were starting to branch out, and we had some shows booked in other cities on the East Coast, and of course that all went to shit. I'll be going to Asheville in early September and trying to look into playing at some venues up there again in Greenville and just kind of getting our feet wet once again.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. And then just for anyone listening at home, I'm going to read your website blurb because I personally love it more than anything in life. But on your website, you guys are described as weaving powerful vocals with heavy guitar riffs and 80s synth beats. And that was all I needed to fall in love. But there's all of Dares the Darkness has evolved into a progressive art collective that seeks to bring new sounds to the shores of Charleston, South Carolina. That was so fucking cool. I was like, yeah, fuck yeah. And then I listened to the first song on the track, which is All Right Now. And it's that very Heather's walking down the hallway 80s synth.
Yeah, I was
transformed.
That.
It was perfect.
Oh my god, so. That scene in Jawbreakers where they're walking yes. down the hall. I'm like, ooh, I just want to live for that moment.
Thank you. So, that's all I really want.
The band doesn't know this, but when I come up with a lot of loops, Ken knows this. He and I used to be both bouncers at the gay bar, and their set list every night was amazing. So a lot of our original loops are influenced by the music that used to be played at this bar. It was the only gay bar in town, so it had really good music.
Yeah. They have to.
Yeah.
What's that?
I said they have to.
Yeah. Exactly.
Got to keep the gays coming back.
That's right.
You guys, thank you so much for taking the time and talking with me. We were talking with Becca, who does lead vocals and keyboard. We were talking Mike, who does guitar and mixing. And anything
else? Yeah. Programming.
Okay. Yeah. Danielle on drums and Mr. Minister on bass. Anything you guys want to end with? I'm going to make sure I plug everywhere people can find you in the episode notes, but I've got Facebook and Instagram at Olive Dares the Darkness, your website, www.darethedarkness.com, which you also have merch on there that people can go on and buy. Your YouTube channel is Olive Dares the Darkness.
Mm-hmm. It's in the process of being... we are applying for an official artist page for that. That's kind of
nice.
Yeah. And we have a Twitter page too.
Oh, Twitter.
The Twitter is not Olive Dares the Darkness. It's Olive Dares the D one.
Oh my God. I didn't know that. Olive Dares the D.
One.
I'm the Why? Same way. When I made my Making a Martini Twitter, I had to do Making a Martini 1 at Gmail because apparently someone else out there has Olive Dares the D. Okay.
Yeah. Well, no, I think Olive Dares the Darkness is too long. Maybe they thought that like Olive Dares the Duh is less offensive than Olive Dares the D one.
Thank you, Caleb.
Yes,
and
course.
Anybody can find our music on any streaming platform. We're out there. Just look for All of Dares the Darkness, give it a search, and listen to us. Please.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. All right, everyone. We will be right back. All right, that was All of Dares the Darkness with Becca, Mike, Danielle, and Mr. Minister. A huge thank you to them for taking the time and chatting with me. Unfortunately, this episode came out after their Saturday show that they just had, but if you're in the Charleston area, honestly, even if you're fucking not in the Charleston area, we did plug two more of their upcoming performances, one on July 30th at Pub on 61 and another on September 17th, which is for Rock the Rescue, location TBD at the moment, I believe, but I mean, you can literally just Google Rock the Rescue, so do that, okay? Go out there and please, please, please support them because they're fucking great. All of Dares the Darkness, first album, Roman Numeral 1, which now I know, is now streaming on Apple Music, Amazon Music, Spotify. Basically, you can find them pretty much anywhere you get your music. And you can also find them on Facebook and Instagram at All of Dares the Darkness, on Twitter at All of Dares the D1, on YouTube, All of Dares the Darkness YouTube channel, and their website, www.olivedaresthedarkness.com. I think that about wraps everything up for me. If you are a fan of Making a Martini, please, please, please share with your friends, family, pets, sexual partners, I don't know. Listen to my podcast while you have sex. And if you want to be a Droop fan, you can go to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and a review, because that helps me out a lot. So I want to end this episode with a little snippet of the song Say Oh from All of Dares the Darkness on their album that you can currently find. So go do that. And that's how we'll end. So this has been Making a Martini, up dry and straight to the point. Cheers.
Diamonds, they make me feel cheap. Everything you give me is something she can keep. Croissant, caviar, champagne of my choice. Your plane is in my driveway.